Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about Nelson Mandela's legacy and its impact on Africa. And with us tonight is Fred Omolo. He's a Kenyan journalist. He joins us by phone, I guess, from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Douglas. I am here in Kisumu. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
And how is Kisumu?
Kisumu is relaxed. Barack Obama was here a few days ago, and they're just basking his glory.
I see. Interesting. We also have a regular panelist, Lemon Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us by phone from Durban, South Africa. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much, Douglas. Good evening to Fred and good evening to all our listeners.
You're very much welcome. Well, as I said, gentlemen, our topic tonight is the Nelson Mandela Day. The Nelson Mandela International Day is marked every July 18th. That's when he would have turned 80 years old. Let me start in Durban. First of all, it's still the Mandela Week. So what's going on over there?
Lots of things. It has been a very wonderful week for South Africans, all South Africans, white, black, any color. They have been involved in acts of charity, showing, espousing the values which Mandela espoused. Almost the whole country is involved in that change. And of course, it was an addition to have Obama, who gave us a very inspiring speech, which actually fired up many people. So in the whole country, I can say, is fired up to renew, to reactivate, to remember the great man Mandela as he was.
I see. Fred, how about your neck of the woods? People in Kenya, of course, you mentioned Mandela across Africa, around the world. Mandela is Mandela. So what are people saying in Kenya?
This is a very interesting week because we have the centenary of Nelson Mandela's birth. We have the visit by Barack Obama over the weekend and including Monday. And then we had the momentous victory of France, which for some reason every African wants to say is an African victory. So it's a crazy week going on right here where African nationalism and pride is soaring to unprecedented levels. Rarely do you get all these events happening at the same time, you know? So here we are, yeah.
I see. Gentlemen, when you talk of Mandela, there are virtues that people want to emphasize. There are even the speeches that were given all emphasized his good deeds, his capacity to forgive and move ahead and unite people. Suleiman, is this spirit of Mandela alive in South Africa?
There is no doubt as far as South Africa is concerned. If I'm going to take it up from Barack Obama's speech, because the speech really gave everything one would have wanted, what Mandela would have wanted to hear. It is almost what Mandela should have said had he been present. In Barack Obama's speech, in a nutshell, he appreciated the stride which South Africa was taking, which are in line with the value which Mandela stood for. But also, he looked at the broader continent and the world at large. He emphasized the declining democracy, the decline in good governance, the absence of good leaders or worthy leaders on the continent and the world at large. So even as far as South Africa is concerned, by and large, we have got the good things for us as a country, but also we mourn, like the way Barack decried the absurd state of the African continent. Even as we enjoy the good things given by Mandela to our country, we also look at the absurdness of the state in which the continent is, which is terribly absurd. If I'm to go a little bit in deep, in summary, you are looking at a country where we are enjoying the kindness of leadership, the humane nature of leadership, the selflessness, the sincerity of leaders, the trustworthiness of leaders, the patriotism of leaders, as far as South Africa is concerned, against what Barack Obama looked at as far as the continent is. You look at the greed on the continent. You look at the corruption on the continent. You look at the heartlessness, the callousness, the cruelty on the continent. You look at the deception, the untrustworthiness, the unpatriotism on the continent. You look at the hollowness, the shamelessness, the spirit of fortune hunters in the leadership on the continent. If you are to summarize, if you are to look in the eyes of Barack Obama and you compare the leadership of Mandela against the leadership of the continent, you are looking of someone who is the leader of the country, and the others on the continent, many of them who are there now. When you look at the way Baraka explained them, it is as if many of them are not even worth to be chiefs of the villages.
I see. Fred, assuming Mandela was living today and he was living in countries like DR Congo, Rwanda, Uganda, in your neighborhood there, do you think he would not be beaten up, or would he be safe in those areas?
Of course, Nelson Mandela would probably look like an alien from another planet if he was living in this country right now, because he did one thing which is still a problem for our leaders here in Kenya. Clinging on to power, he served one term, he served it as president, and then he let go. He did not pursue anything beyond that. He served his people. He made sure that they transitioned from the apartheid era, from the colonialist era, into a modern independent African republic. However, Nelson Mandela still remains one of the most controversial.
Are you there, Fred?
In the Kish.
Okay.
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I can hear you now, yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm saying Nelson Mandela still remains one of the most controversial icons within the Kenyan context, within the Kisumu context where I am, because of two reasons. First of all, there is a segment of Kenyans who consider Nelson Mandela to be a great leader for the simple reason that he fought for independence, made sure that his country got independence, served for one term, and then handed over the country to his people. Whatever they wanted to do with it, beyond that, it was upon them. That was an idealistic person. And a great deal of Kenyans admire that side of him. But there is another side. I like to call them the political economists. They don't just look at what he did in as far as gaining freedom, serving one term, and being an idealist was. They look at it in terms of the context of, fine, you got independence for your people, but are they empowered? Do they have the economic systems in their hands? Do they have the systems in their hands to be able to lead their lives, to be able to produce, to be able to participate in the global capitalist socialist system, and to be players who are actually producers and consumers and who have a say in what the world has to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
This other group of people do not consider Nelson Mandela an icon. They do not consider him a person who actually helped his country. They consider him similar to what we have in Kenya, our freedom fighters, or our independence generation president, Jomo Kenyatta, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think by now you know the history of Jomo Kenyatta. He was a freedom fighter. He was able to fight and to the level of Lancaster House in London and get this country independence. But once he became the president, a lot of people feel that he sold out and he became like the colonialists who are ruling this country,
mm-hmm.
right? And the political economists, as I like to call them, they feel that Nelson Mandela falls in that category.
I see.
He was,
was
the kind of person who brought freedom to his country but sold out at
mm-hmm.
some level,
mm-hmm.
never really giving his people the gains of that freedom. And that,
I guess, Suleiman, what Fred is alluding to there is even today, the current inequality, the poverty among the majority black people who don't seem to have actually gained economically as far as things are concerned. They got the political freedom and independence right, but then the wealth moved from either remained among the white people, part of South Africans, or the Africans who now moved into their footsteps and amassed wealth and left the majority of people rotting in poverty.
Yeah, I think there is that school of thought, which basically also held by some people here in South Africa. But I think what has brought about this is a failure to differentiate between the aspirations and the values which Mandela stood for. Mandela, for example, as my brother has said, he fought for democracy. In the feeling of Mandela, democracy was the basis for the other aspects to go on.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to start with democracy in order to be able to address social and economic justice. The world had moved so fast. He knew that himself and his generation may not be able to go into that social and economic justice, which is a complex part of it. That is why he laid down the foundation for democracy. In democracy, what do we mean? Under Mandela, the basis of democracy was to establish institutions, independent institutions, which could facilitate the exploitation of both natural and human resources, which would facilitate equal opportunity for all. By doing so, what do I mean? You have independent security system, independent electoral system, or independent administrative system, independent parliament. In South Africa, we have got a country where police or security people never obstruct, never harass, never arrest or imprison an opposition leader because he is not at par with those in government.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, we have got municipalities which are shared. Opposition leaders are allowed. They can campaign and lead. Surprisingly, in South Africa, the best province is led by the opposition, the Western Cape,
mm-hmm.
is led by the opposition. So by laying such a foundation, Mandela knew that as far as other aspects are concerned, if you have got a society where opportunities are opened for all, where there is respect of law, where there is independence of institutions which people can run to, then another generation will tackle the social and economic justice which my brother is talking about. That is where the people have failed to separate Mandela from what has happened after him.
I see.
That it was the responsibility of the generation which he left behind.
Mm.
For him, he only laid the foundation for them, and the foundation is very clear. He did what he could do.
I see.
For example, he laid the foundation. He was a man who was so close to children and education. He laid the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
He has got free education for the children. He himself, he did not only talk about the love for education. He established a foundation for education. Before he died, he has got one of the state-of-the-art hospitals for children. And, by the way, if you are listening to the United Nations, one of the representatives from New York, the representative from New York City, he said, when Mandela first visited America, he took off and went and visited one of the schools in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, he said about 7 schools in New York are named after Mandela. So this is a man who had all the love for Gibeon, and he did what he could during his time. Yes, he may not have declared free education for university or for tertiary level, because he knew that was a complex economic issue. It needed funds. It would not be declared there and then. He left it to those who are coming after him to address that one.
All right.
Those are some of the criticism which have been leveled against man. They are justified, but it is a failure to understand what the man really meant in his time.
I see. Well, Fred, hold your thought. Let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of Mandela's legacy and its impact on Africa.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about Mandela's legacy and its impact on Africa. Our panelists are Fred Umolo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mgula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Fred, you heard what Suleiman said there in defense of what Mandela didn't actually achieve, because you can achieve so much in one term. But let's move on and look at, if you look back, countries that helped South Africa in its hour of need to fight apartheid, countries like Tanzania,
yes,
countries like Uganda, even as far as up north as Libya, most of those countries actually didn't follow Mandela's route. They took their own other way. Remember, Barack Obama has talked about the strong man mentality in African among African leaders. Why? You support somebody to get something good, but you move the other direction? Isn't that weird?
it's an interesting phenomenon if you consider it in that way. To some extent, even Kenya provided a sanctuary.
Yes, indeed,
for the
it did.
Anti-apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. To some extent, even Kenya provided sanctuary to the anti-apartheid forces. I remember very vividly in the 80s, for example, if you are issued with a Kenyan passport, an ordinary Kenyan citizen, it did not matter who you were, whether you work for government or not. What matters was you are a Kenyan citizen. Whenever you got that passport, it was stamped. You can travel anywhere in this world except South Africa, because they're an apartheid state.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, our president was a man called Daniel Arap Moi. Daniel Arap Moi did not provide any support for the apartheid system. And in fact, when one of his ministers, a man called Charles Njonjo, was discovered to have business links to businesses in South Africa, he actually fomented ways and found ways of kicking him out of government, right? But at that time, Kenya was not living to the ideals that Mandela stood for. And even after Mandela came out of prison in 1990, and he came in 1990 and he toured Kenya because of the support that the country gave the ANC and the Umkhonto Wesizwe, which at that time was run by Jacob Zuma, the former president of South Africa. When he came in 1990 and he toured Nairobi, I was actually there. I saw him with my own eyes. And this was one of those legacy trips that he was taking around countries that gave support to the ANC during the apartheid struggle. However, somehow all of us developed in different shapes, forms, and fashion. Why? Because we have different cultures, because we have different ideals, because we have different colonial legacies. So let me take the case, for example, of Libya. Libya gave a lot of support to South Africa, but Libya did not have the same kind of history as Kenya from antiquity. If you look at Libya, they had monarchies. They had a strong cultural tradition of Islam. They had a strong cultural tradition of monarchies and chieftains and things of that nature. So when they kicked out King Idris in 1969, when Muammar Gaddafi took over, he could only be another strong man, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what their culture is attuned to, right? In Kenya, by the time apartheid was approaching its death, we had already gone through one president. We were in the middle of a second president who we were tired of. And it was looking like we were expecting a third president. So our trend of development in terms of social and democratic ideals looks very similar to what ended up becoming what South Africa was, because President Moi eventually served his 2 terms constitutionally and gave way to Kibaki, who then retired, and now we have Kenyatta. So looking at the different countries that gave support to the ANC during their struggle against apartheid, looking at the countries that Nelson Mandela toured, including Palestine, he actually went and met Yasser Arafat, to the chagrin of Israel and to the chagrin of the U.S., he went and met Yasser Arafat. These were all the people who were fighting for revolutionary ideals. What is my point? Very briefly, in the next 10 seconds, let me express it. My point is this. You can be a democracy. You can be a dictatorship. You can be a monarchy. You can be a chieftaincy. But if you believe in self-determination, the people who occupy and live in a space, self-determining and deciding how they should live and rule themselves, then you can support a revolutionary ideal in a place where people are being ruled by aliens, which was the case in South Africa. And that's why these different countries developed in different forms and fashions.
I see.
These different dictators, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see. Exactly. Suleiman, do you share Fred's view there?
I don't have any problem with his views. The only thing I can add is that I think the other side of looking at Mandela, if I would look it from the prism of Obama, is the way Obama looked at him. Obama juxtaposed Mandela and his values. And then he looked at the continent. He was making comments, and you could see his line of reasoning was looking at the way Mandela was, the example he was, and then what we have today at the continent. For example, you look at Mandela, the humaneness in Mandela, the value of being humane, or here in South Africa, which we call Ubuntu, or in other parts of Africa, South Africa, Ubuntu Bulam, or the love for others. In South Africa, we have the saying that Umuntu Gumuntu Ngabantu, that a person is a person, you are what you are because of others. The way Mandela gave that example, he sacrificed all his life for the life of the others. And then, now, currently, we are reminded, what kind of leaders do we have? Do we have the same people espousing the same humanness? The answer is no. Here is Mandela, who was jailed, but he never jailed his jailers. He invited them on the table. Then you compare on the candidate. He never considered his opponents as enemies. In Africa, we have got leaders who feel the other opponents with other political views are enemies, and they treat them as animals. Look at the political terrain on the continent. Look at all the opposition leaders on the continent, from West Africa, from Cameroon. Johnny Frumbi retired as a battered man. Christian Gritti Olympio in Togo, a battered man. Savimbi in Angola, Shangarai in Zimbabwe, Dhlakama in Mozambique, Tshisekedi in DRC, in Uganda, Besigye. In Rwanda, it is even worse. We have got two ladies, one Victoria Ingabire. She only tried to compete against the president. She's now rotting in prison. Then there is a young girl, 35 years old, an accountant by profession, with her mother, with her sister. They are all locked up in prison because the young one of 35 years tried to compete against Kagame. The man does not even have that empathy of a human being. You hold a small girl who is as old as your daughter, and you lock her in prison. A mother of a child, and you put her in prison because she mothered a child who is competing against you. A sister of a person who has competed. So you can see how cruel, how inhuman these current leaders. In Zimbabwe, someone was locked up because he had abused the Mugabe. In Tanzania, another one was locked up. In Uganda, I don't know, Dr. Nyanzi was locked up because he tried to question President Museveni why he was not supplying sanitary pads to girls. Because of that, he had to be put in prison.
Yes.
They are not just cruel. They lack even the humanity, which is a value, which is a basic African value, which is a basic value of civilized nations.
Oh, okay. So, Suleiman,
we should look at Mandela.
Okay, in one sentence, do you think Mandela's example will shine elsewhere? Will people copy what he did, or maybe there's no hope? Briefly, very briefly.
The absurdity is that if I could take the tone of Barack Obama, he seemed so remorseful, and I think I would also be so remorseful. He talked about the lack of democracy. He talked about the greed. And look at the way the African leaders are so greedy. One, they cannot go out of power. Two, they're extremely corrupt. There is tribalism. There is nepotism. These are the things which Mandela worked against.
I see.
And it is increasing instead of reducing. So I think if I could take the tone of Barack Obama, I think the continent and the world at large is in danger because of the declining trend. Because there is a decline towards democracy and good governance.
Okay, so, Fred, one word. Do you think the spirit will move across the continent or not?
I believe it will move. I just have two things to say.
Very briefly, 10 seconds.
One,
10 seconds, please.
If you are an aspiring change maker in Africa right now, read the history of Barack Hussein Obama.
Oh, okay.
Number two, read the history of the presidency of Barack Hussein Obama and look at his deliberations and decisions.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, Fred. I think we leave it at that. That's all the time for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Fred Omolo and Suleiman Mugula. Thanks very much for being there. Our producer tonight was Gwen Oten, and our engineer was Thomas Blondet. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for joining us. Until then, I'm Douglas Impoga, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA.